From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
The two Centre Alliance senators, Stirling Griff and Rex Patrick, will often be pivotal to the fate of government legislation during this parliamentary term. If the government can muster Centre Alliance plus one other crossbencher, it can pass legislation that's opposed by Labor and the Greens. In those circumstances, it doesn't need Pauline Hanson's One Nation. Centre Alliance, which has Rebecca Sharkey in the lower house, is the old South Australian-based Nick Xenophon team, but without Nick and with new branding. The party has a generally centre-right stance on economic issues and a generally progressive one on social policies. Its pivotal position in the Senate has already been highlighted when it was instrumental in facilitating the government's tax package getting through. In that case, its dancing partner was Tasmanian Independent Jackie Lambie, with whom it has struck up not an alliance, but a consultative relationship. Stirling Griff, I know it's very early days, but how do you see this Senate shaping up compared with the last one in which the non-green crossbench was much larger?
Well, look, it's certainly a far more manageable crossbench than we had before, and there are less people and not the same degree of extreme views. One example would be the past Senator Fraser Anning as having an extreme view. Now, we discuss our views far more respectfully amongst each other, and ultimately we all want good outcomes for Australia. So it really is operating the way it should be rather than being dysfunctional as it was in the past. But the important thing to remember is that none of us that are there at the moment are there to wreck the government's agenda. We just want good legislative reforms, we want good governance, and we just want to ensure that legislation is balanced and will not negatively impact on the community.
So this is really going back to a Senate as a house of review, making changes around the edges rather than saying no, at least from the crossbench point of view. Is that what you're saying?
Look, that's correct. I mean, we're not there to be wreckers. We're not there to destroy the government's legislative agenda. If we believe that what they're putting forward is worthwhile, it hasn't been introduced with any form of malice or to attack a particular group over another, and produces good community outcomes, we're prepared to support it.
Now, in general, what will be the priority issues for Centre Alliance in this term?
Well, given that we're South Australian elected senators, our priority is very much looking after South Australia's interests. So every piece of legislation that we consider and every bill of motion that we put forward must reflect positively on South Australia. Now, of course, that means an emphasis on the Murray-Darling Basin and driving down energy prices and continuing the legacy that was originally there with Nick Xenophon. We're very heavy on transparent and accountable government. That's always been a strong focus for our party, and we'll continue to hold government to account via OPDs, estimates, questions, and other mechanisms that will ensure proper process and value for the taxpayer. And of course, we'll strongly advocate for a federal ICAC.
Now, the Senate today has just agreed to a Centre Alliance move for an inquiry into whether two former ministers, Christopher Pyne and Julie Bishop, breached the ministerial code by taking up positions within 18 months that crossed over their former portfolios. What sort of community feedback have you had on this issue?
Look, quite simply, it doesn't pass the pup test. I mean, people see this as yet again another MP who's been paid well over his parliamentary term and received a high pension using his public one pass position to feather his own nest, possibly, quite possibly, at the expense ultimately of the public. I mean, he can't unknow what he knows, and his knowledge will benefit his new employer and will likely not benefit the people that elected him.
But the problem is, can any code really get at people once they've departed this place?
Look, because the code is voluntary, it doesn't really have any legal standing. It doesn't mean much at all. I mean, that's true. But, it needs to be more explicit about what is acceptable and what isn't. I think that's a very important thing. And I think the current code is somewhat vague. And we need to reassure ourselves also that former ministers are also abiding by them as well. The ministerial standards say former ministers, and I'll quote, will not take personal advantage of information to which they have had access as a minister where that information is not generally available to the public. Now, even if he doesn't breach the code, I can't see how Mr. Pyne can properly honour the guidelines and also do his new job to the standard that's expected. And look, the motion that we moved in the Senate today to refer the issue to an inquiry will ensure it's looked at more appropriately, and hopefully there'll be some change as a result of it.
What are the numbers on that inquiry? Does the government have a majority or not?
No, it's pretty even there. I think it's going to be a fair and balanced inquiry. Government certainly didn't want it to get up, but there was sufficient support for it to take place.
Now, just on some pieces of legislation, you're strongly opposed to the government trying to repeal the Medivac law. What do you think this has achieved, and what are your objections to repeal?
Look, the Medivac process is working very effectively. It hasn't restarted the boats. It only applies to people in need of critical medical care when they cannot get that critical medical care on Manus or Nauru. So it's very much a humane process. It's supported by the medical, in fact, by the AMA. In fact, all medical groups support it because it is saving lives. So it's all about timely medical transfers, and again, only those that are critical, and there's no other way that they can actually be treated in those locations. So there really is no justification for repealing it, especially since it hasn't restarted the boats and won't restart the boats. It's really all about Minister Dutton doing a bit of a victory lap and flexing his muscle, in my view.
Now, the repeal will depend on Jackie Lambie, won't it? And what do you think she'll do?
It is likely to fall down to Jackie for the final vote. We have had discussions on this, but I mean, she is her own person. It's up to her to make her own mind up. I'd like to think, and in fact, the party would like to think, that she won't support the repeal.
And you're hopeful of that? Do you have indication she won't?
Again, you know, the arrangement we have is to sit down and discuss upcoming legislation, pass on our individual views, but not to dogmatically say you must do this and you must do that. I mean, we all have the freedom to be able to vote whichever way we want to. We even have that freedom within our own party. I'd like to think that Jackie will not allow it to go through, but in the end, it will be up to her to make that decision.
Well, just before we go on to some other pieces of legislation, how does that arrangement work in practice? Do you caucus with Jackie before each piece of legislation, or do you intend to, or is it a more general sort of...
Now, look, there are some pieces of legislation that we know are coming up that are important to us, that are, we both hold the same views. We know what that legislation is. But ahead of a sitting week or a sitting fortnight, we would share our thoughts on which way each of us intends to vote. And if we can arrive at a common position, we will do so.
So you'll have a meeting each fortnight?
Necessarily a physical meeting, but we will, we will talk about the key issues as a group.
Just to go to another couple of pieces of current legislation, though I suspect they'll be passed without crossbench support in the end. Firstly, the legislation to allow a minister to ban foreign fighters from returning for up to 2 years. What's your feeling about that one?
Well, that's the temporary exclusion orders bill. We support the intent of the bill, but we still have serious concerns that need to be resolved. I mean, our view is that we need to resolve questions around the constitutionality of the proposed laws, which obviously affect Australian citizens, and also the scope of the Home Affairs Minister's power to exclude citizens in this way, and very importantly, the lack of judicial review of the Minister's decision. I mean, we'll seek to amend the bill to allow for parliamentary oversight of temporary exclusion orders, and we will definitely send the bill off to inquiry this week.
And in the end, if the Minister won't give way, would you block it or try to block it, or would you say on balance it should go through?
Look, I think we're quite confident achieving some of the amendments that we would like to see put in place. First, let's see how it goes with the inquiry, see what comes back with the inquiry. But, you know, with improvements, you know, it's likely that it will go through in some form.
And what about the legislation to use the unused funds from the Building Australia Fund for a drought future fund?
Look, we can't hold back on this. I know Labor has some issues with the source of the funding, but, you know, the money needs to be spent to provide immediate relief and put in place appropriate strategies. I mean, we want rigid controls to ensure the money actually ends up where it's needed. But once we're assured of that, we'll likely support the package.
And just one other bill, and I'm not sure here of the lineup on this one or the likely lineup, but the one designed to curb activists from using the internet to encourage farm trespassing or farm invasions. What's your feeling about that one?
Look, my colleague Rebecca Sharkey is working through that at the moment and will likely arrive at our final position on that shortly. But it's fair to say that we're leaning towards support.
Now, can I take you back to your backing of the tax package? At one stage, you were really concerned that the package could only be financed by long-term cuts to services. Now, you haven't received guarantees on this. Isn't it almost inevitable, though, that those fears will be realised?
No, not really. I mean, the actual package itself was important to, you know, stimulate the economy. It was critical that the economy...
That was the first stage, though, rather than the later stage.
Well, that's true, but the government refused to split the bill, so we all found ourselves in a position where in order to get the immediate tax cuts through and stimulus into the economy, we had to support the entire package. Now, what we've said all along is if the tax cuts become unaffordable, we'd expect the government of the day, you know, in 2024... to dump the third stage or make appropriate adjustments to it, because this was not something that was going to be in effect immediately, but it was important that you know, the complete package as it is now went through so that we had that
immediate
stimulus.
I can't see any government doing that, can you?
Well, maybe they don't need to do that. If the economy is doing very well, they won't do it. But if there are issues, any government worth its salt will make appropriate changes at that time.
But any Senate worth its salt would probably say no.
We'll have to see.
Now, you did win some concessions in those negotiations on the tax package on gas policy in return for your support. Are you confident the government will deliver on these? We haven't seen any announcements yet.
Look, we are confident. I mean, announcements will take place over the coming months. Now, it's not up to us to make government's announcements. We've had some very positive negotiations with them over recent months, numerous meetings. I mean, they want to achieve the same outcome that we'd like. So, I mean, they're on exactly the same page as us, and we're confident that we will see positive results within the next 3 to 12 months, but it is up to them to make those announcements.
Do you find the Morrison government better than the Turnbull government in terms of negotiations? Or not much different?
No, look, the principal negotiator for us is Minister Cormann. He is held in very high regard by pretty much all in the chamber. Certainly, we have a very good relationship with him. Every single piece of legislation that we or the government wants to progress through the Senate goes via him to us. And there really has been no difference in those negotiations with the previous administration versus the current one.
Now, there are mounting calls, including from some Liberals, for an increase in Newstart. What's your view on that?
Look, we most certainly support it lifting to $75, and pretty much everyone apart from government supports it currently. And I think the reason that they have issues is really the quantum of the increase more than perhaps a gradual increase.
Can you give an amount that you think the increase should be?
Look, we would certainly support it moving to $75, and that is very common, whether it's ACCI or other business groups. The majority of people out there, pretty much with the exception of government, would like to see it move to $75. Now, we understand that a $75 increase would have a huge impact on the budget. So at the very least, we'd like to see $10, $20, $30, you know, some incremental increase would make a big difference to those on Newstart.
Now, you have real power here through negotiations on various things the government wants. Are you willing to use that power to get an increase?
Well, yes, we are, and we do have ongoing discussions with them. In fact, even with government, in fact, even in recent days, we've brought up this topic, and we'll continue to do so for as long as it takes. We'll exert as much pressure as we possibly can to, at the very least, have a minor increase from where it is now.
What's been the response when you've brought it up?
Look, I think the response from them, and in fact the response from Labor when we've had the discussion with them in the lead up to the election, is that it is an enormous amount of money and would have a huge impact on the budget. And I think most are pretty receptive to working out a program where there is a gradual increase, and hopefully that will be the case.
But we're talking about the government here because Labor's out of the game.
Well, we are, and look, I would like to think the government will actually move on it. We'll continue having dialogue with them, and hopefully they will.
But just to be clear on this, you are willing, in the end, to twist their arms when they need something from you?
Where possible, we will do that. Jackie is certainly behind an increase as well. And look, I think it does good things for the economy as well. So, I mean, it's very important that an increase does take place.
Now, just finally, we know that your party's vote collapsed at the last election, and obviously a major reason was that Nick Xenophon is off the stage. But in terms of the parliament, how do you find operating without Nick Xenophon? Because he was so much the party, wasn't he?
Look, there's never been a senator like Nick, and there probably never will be again. I mean, we don't have particularly his flair for stunts. But like him, you know, we fight for the underdog and for a more transparent and accountable government, and most importantly, South Australia being South Australian senators. Now, we're good negotiators and we've achieved some really good wins. Our core principles haven't changed, and we're just going to continue to work at arriving at sensible solutions for the community.
Do you accept that in terms of the Senate, you've realistically only got this term?
Look, I don't. I wouldn't consider that to be the case. The difference this time around, or the last election versus the previous, is that we changed our name less than 12 months ago. We know from polling that when people understood the connection between Centre Alliance and the previous NXT, our vote tripled. But we didn't have the funds this time around that we had in previous elections to be able to promote and build the brand. I mean, Nick Xenophon team, Nick Xenophon group, over the last two elections, had a budget of around about $2.5 million. Centre Alliance this time around spent under $200,000. So it was really an awareness. We were lacking awareness, having changed the name so close to the election. But between here and the next election in 3 years' time, far more people will be aware that Centre Alliance, or what Centre Alliance stands for, and that we were connected with the original NXT.
Maybe you should have kept Nick Xenophon's name, even if Nick Xenophon was gone.
Look, you couldn't do that. Nick didn't want that. You know, I talk to Nick every 2 or 3 weeks, briefly.
So he takes an interest in the party still?
Oh, look, he does take an interest in the party. He isn't a voting member. He's not on our management committee. But, you know, you can't take politics out of the man.
Stirling Griff, thank you very much for talking with The Conversation today. And that's all from this podcast. Thank you to my producer, Rashna Farooq, and we'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.